Well, hello everyone. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and this is Turning Towards Life, and we are here again for our 421st or 22nd week. And hello, Lizzie. Welcome. It's so lovely and very, very good and joyful and heart-filling to see you. And hello everyone, all of you who are with us. Thank you for joining us again. It is such a joy to have this many circles of surround around this conversation. And we know that the conversation that's about to follow, Lizzie, is not just between you and me. It's between us and all of you who are alongside us and in this with us. But it's also a conversation that happens inside you, and for many of you happens between you and other people you know and you care about, either because you bring them the sources or you share the recording with them. So it's a very special privilege to be taking another step in unfolding this into so many people's lives. And as always, we're going to do what we do, which is to pick up a very rich and wonderful source that you've brought us, Lizzie, that I'm sure you'll have things to say about. And hello to you.
Thank you, Justin. Yeah, so this source is one that a mutual lovely person of ours, Justin, sent me. Sue sent me this. And I want to just shout out to her and say thank you. I get Nick's things anyway, but she sent me this as a reminder and kind of context for a conversation that we're in together. And I loved it that she highlighted it for me, because this way of Nick talking, and you know, you sometimes say, oh, we've done this many sources from this person and that person. I think Nick might be taking over the top spot or something these days, because I just feel like so much of what he says is so, I mean, maybe one day Nick would listen to us and that he would know us in some way. Wouldn't that be amazing? Because I feel such a deep admiration for him. So Nick Cave and his writings, and particularly the Red Hand Files, which are his kind of version of Agony Aunt, people write to him and he comes back to them, as you know, Justin. And it's a really wonderful thing to receive in the inbox. If anybody's interested in doing that, just go to Google Nick Cave Red Hand Files and you'll find it. And his responses to people's questions are just extraordinary. And this is one of them. So this is actually a bigger email than this. If you go and find it, there's other sections, but this section was the bit that I felt like would be really wonderful for us to wander into together, Justin. So I'm going to read and then we'll see where this takes us, Justin. So Nick says, I'm inclined to believe in a form of intelligence within the universe, as I hold that consciousness or intelligence exists throughout everything, that it goes all the way down to the fundamental atomic matter of things. This force woven into everything, both living and non-living, is inherently good. If we choose, we could call this force God. I view this power as a kind of cosmic disposition that grows, understands, and empathizes with us, suffers with us, you might say, and that humans are fractal, as Cormac so beautifully puts it, exemplars or metaphors of the melancholic nature of this God-soaked universe. He's talking about a quote from Cormac McCarthy that came from the question that was asked to him when he says, Cormac, I believe that evil exists not only within the human heart, but also as an external energy separate from us, moving through the world, a nullifying destructive potency, going to and fro in the earth and walking up and down in it. We can see if we choose all around us. We can see it if we choose all around us. Yet we can act as the remedy to this existential predicament by directing our efforts towards the world's flourishing and away from its destruction in whatever way we can. It is our duty to attend to the sorrow of the universe, the sorrow of God.
Thank you, Lizzie. So we'll, and thank you, Sue, for pointing us to this. We'll post this, as we always do, this fragment of Nick's writing in the show notes and also on turningtowards.life, where you can find all the videos and all the sources, and you can sign up to get them in your email inbox, and you can support us and contact us in various ways. And here it is. So this is also, as you said, Lizzie, from Nick Cave's Red Hand Files, and there's a website for this. So all the Red Hand Files are on Nick's website, and you can just go and read to your heart's content if you search it out. It's very wonderful. So this is what Nick writes in response to a question and an earlier quote from Cormac McCarthy as well. That's the, I am inclined to believe in a form of intelligence within the universe, as I hold that consciousness or intelligence exists throughout everything, that it goes all the way down to the fundamental atomic matter of things. And this force woven into everything, both living and non-living, is inherently good. If we choose, we could call this force God. I view this power as a kind of cosmic disposition that grows, understands, and empathizes with us, suffers with us, you might say, and that humans are fractal, as Cormac so beautifully puts it. We are exemplars or metaphors of the melancholic nature of this God-soaked universe. I believe that evil exists not only within the human heart, but also as an energy, as an external energy separate from us, moving through the world, a nullifying, destructive potency, going to and fro in the earth and walking up and down in it. We can see it if we choose all around us, and yet we can act as the remedy to this existential predicament by directing our efforts towards the world's flourishing and away from its destruction in whatever way we can. It is our duty to attend to the sorrow of the universe, the sorrow of God.
Thank you, Justin. So this thing happened to me again, which I haven't really felt recently, actually, in turning towards life with you, Justin, which is I suddenly don't know what the word evil means. You know, when I have these experiences where I go, oh, I think I've just kind of taken that word for granted that I know what it means, and now I actually don't know what it means. So anyway, I'm feeling that now because I don't find it very easy to see things as black and white or good and evil these days. Like everything feels like a shade of grey. Like where does trauma come in all of that, for example? And it feels like so much is smushed together in my experience as a human being that I don't know how to split the world up so cleanly anymore. So I'm finding myself very curious and longing to kind of define evil in a way. And I think I'm just going to take it here, Justin, that it's something about destruction and not acting in service of the world's kind of benevolence and aliveness. But of course, there's lots of things that aren't that, which aren't evil as well. So anyway, that's what I mean. I feel like the dichotomy of these two things is hard for me to grapple with. And I probably need to sit and journal for 5 days or something and figure out what I think about that. But the thing that really got me about this piece of writing of Nick's is his way of holding to this belief, this feeling of intelligence and inherent goodness in the world that is us, that is nature, is, like he says, living in living and non-living things. And this inherent goodness, this benevolence, you know, like he says in the second paragraph about evil, we can see it if we choose all around us. I think that goes for this part too, that if I choose, if I look this way, if I seek this way, if I feel open to goodness, it's possible to find it everywhere, even in the things that are really awful. There are humans present, and in humans is, in my belief anyway, there is always goodness somewhere, even if we can't find it or see it. And I feel like that's a very important thing to hold in our lives, is that there is a force, this word that Nick says, a force for goodness. And I don't feel like I'm not landed in what the definition of God or what that is. And it sounds like Nick is more landed in that, like he has a way of associating God with this kind of goodness, this kind of fundamental, woven into everything, inherent goodness. Seems to me like he's suggesting that's his way of feeling, experiencing what God is to him. And again, I'm just not sure everything is as clean cut as naming what that is. I feel more able to be with the question of God and goodness in a kind of experiential way, rather than defining it for like what I should be thinking or what I should be defining things as. And I think, though, what's important for me about this piece of writing of Nick's is that in my experience, in all the conversations that I have with myself, with others, the deeper we go, and when we get to a kind of bedrock of humanness, all that really ever gets revealed to me is this goodness. Like, if we get through the difficulty, there lies a layer of goodness to support us until maybe the next layer of difficulty comes. But there's something that's always present that feels supportive and good and benevolent, and which brings about aliveness because of it being here. And I really appreciate Nick for pointing us towards that and remembering it's a very worthy and serious thing to be wondering, to contemplate, to include, is this sense of benevolence that exists in spite of everything.
I think it's probably the first time, Lizzie, in 400 and something and 8 years and something of turning towards life, that we've really had a source that calls us, that names, gives a name for the nature of all things in a way, you know, that is talking about making claims about the nature of being itself, the sort of fundamental ground from which everything we comes. And I'm really, really pleased to be in it. And I'm with you about the trickiness of the terms. I think there's some way in which, certainly for anyone, if you've grown up in a Western culture, you can't help but inherit the very deep, implied, implicit stories about what good and evil are, what God is. All of that language has been infused in a very, very particular way that's very particular in the West. And I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing in and of itself. It's just that to see that there's a great sort of freight of story that gets handed down to us through generations. And so it's quite a thing to do as you're doing, is to sort of step out of obviousness with any of this and to say, well, there's a richness and a complexity here. And I really appreciate so much about Nick's writing in general, and then particularly here, to name that there is a destructive, nullifying potency that is built into the fabric of existence. We can see it all around us. We can see how destructive forces can be and how impersonal they can be. We can get swept away in earthquakes, and that we have that same potential in us. It is an inevitable quality of being a human, because we are fractals. I think this is such beautiful language, that we are expressions of existence itself. How could it be that we would not have that in us? And of course, it's obvious we have it in us. You only have to study history for 5 minutes to see all the ways in which we have been this and can be this on large scales, or look at what happens to ordinary everyday people all the time at the hands of others. And we go, this thing exists. And I think it's really important because there is a way of feeling into the goodness of things that you're talking about, which I want to say something about, of course, in a moment, in a way that is a kind of denial of how much pain and ill we can cause one another and cause the planet. And I think that itself is a kind of ill, you know, is to say everything's fine, everything's in, it's not, there's much that isn't. And so Nick's call that we pay attention really matters. And I think he says, oh, that it exists within the human heart. So it's so easy for us to, us humans, because there's this step we can make where we can see that things are really difficult in the world, but where we won't honor that this is in us too. Mm. We, each of us, can very, very easily cause enormous harm. And then if we do that, we project it out everywhere else. You go, well, it couldn't possibly be me, but it's definitely you, Lizzie, or it's definitely those people over there. And that's where evil lives. And now I feel very good and they're terrible. Mm-hmm. And we can perpetuate this kind of violence towards one another. So I think it's really important, and it's really, really hard that we really attend to the multiplicity of our hearts. And we really allow in that this is all right here all the time. And then, the and then is to remember, and I really am with Nick on this. I too think that this universe is infused with intelligence all the way down. And I think it's infused always with the disposition towards goodness, whatever that means. And I get that there's a lot to say about it. But that we can, and if we stop thinking of ourselves as separate from some kind of standing outside existence, us very clever separate humans, and go, okay, we are of the same stuff. First of all, it seems weird to me to go, we're the only intelligent ones. That stuff out there is radically different from us and not the same. Like, we feel our own intelligence. And it seems an odd thing to do, to go, well, it couldn't possibly exist anywhere else. So, I think the thing where I was wanting to go is, in any moment, we really do have choices about what to cultivate in us. And that is the, as much as I need to be able to come alongside Nick and go, there's a kind of cosmic disposition that grows, understands, and empathizes with us that's inherently good. Because we know that, complex as it is, and sometimes the moral choices are incredibly complicated. They don't, as you say, like divide into easy this and that a lot of the time. But we know what integrity feels like, and we know what care feels like, and we know what kindness feels like, and we know what truthfulness feels like. And we know what sincerity feels like, and we know what patience feels like, and we know what we could, that we know in ourselves in a very sort of fundamental way, the experience of bringing our capacity to be the opposite of nullifying destructive potency, but to be, I think Nick probably says this somewhere, empathetic, nurturing, truthful, like we know what virtues are in us, that we know that. I don't think we just made up. And that's really helpful to know, because if we follow Nick's thinking far enough, we can trust that our being alive and being conscious gives us inherently this capacity to discern, to pay attention, to not tune out, but to keep on attending to how am I and we bringing ourselves in this moment. And I actually really do think we can feel it. We can feel when we get contracted, when we get self-righteous, when we get certain, when we get... And that's a gift bestowed to us by the intelligence of everything. We're not alone in it. So...
Gosh, it's so stirring up so many things for me. I love this bit that you said, Justin, about there's a choice that we make essentially to, Nick says it's our duty to attend to the sorrow of the universe. And in that moment of choice where I get to say, I'm going to work in service of life rather than destruction. In a way, I don't need to know the different definitions of everything, because as you're saying, I do know what my goodness feels like. I do know that. And I think what's arising for me is I really want to be a stand for those of us who question their inherent goodness, who kind of, you know, when we go, well, I'm too bad for this. I'm too guilty. I'm too ashamed. I'm too... that this goodness does exist in spite of whatever one we think about ourselves. This inherent goodness inside whoever gets to listen to this, plus you and I, Justin, our inherent goodness is here in spite of how awful we feel or how bad we think we are or whatever we think we've done or however messed up things are. This inherent goodness is still here. I think that's the thing that I want to remember on a kind of individual level, as it were, because I don't think anything is also though separate from an individual level in the end anyway, but it's kind of the only place I can start is where I am. I know I can't magic the world into a place that I want it to be. God knows what that would be, because even that's a very complex thing to say, but I can't make things go away that feel like they are a crazy potent manifestation of this destruction. I can't make that go away. That's not in my power in this moment, but it is in my power to be with you and to be with others and to be with myself in recognition of inherent goodness, whatever the difficulty feels like in our own worlds, however hard it is and however complex it is and however deep and messed up it is. So that just feels really important to me to say, and that if we are working in that way on where we can work, and we're making this choice that Nick is inviting us to take of attending to the sorrow in you and attending to the sorrow in me and being people who attend to life in service of life itself, feeling aligned with, imbued by, what does he say in here? He says it like a God-ridden or something, like God-soaked. Like if you and I can be in this kind of benevolent-soaked experience of being ourselves, it feels like we can face things. And we are so complex. You know, I think this is the thing that really gets me every day, is that the minute I just start talking to you and asking into the background of who you are and what's happened and what's happening in your experience or whatever, we're just massive. And so to in the face of our complexity and our universe-sized worlds on the inside of us and manifesting on the outside of us, to feel like this is the bedrock of things, like you said, that there is benevolence here, and mostly the only thing I can do about whatever we're defining as evil is to not do it. Like I can't make anyone else not that. I can't do that. But I cannot do it myself. I can notice the nullifying, destructive, potent forces in myself. And I can bring the benevolence to those parts and see what they are and heal and find light in places that feel clenched and dark and tense and violent and mean and stingy and filled with lack. And I can work with them, because I trust that the benevolence is here. I think mainly that's what I want to say about this whole thing. And thank you for bringing that whole piece about, you know, thinking it's all out there, the evil's all out there or something. Because I really feel like in order to face anything inside of us, and we are fractals, so when we do this with ourselves, we are the world. I'm not separate from the world. I'm not any smaller than any other human being in the world. I might have less powers, but in terms of my humanness and the organs that I have and the powers that I have by being human that are given to me by being born, I can work with those things in myself, and I can do that in service of not perpetuating the destructive, nullifying, potent forces that make this world an inhabitable, inhospitable place.
I am so deeply in agreement with what you said, Lizzie, about where we do the work. So it's very easy to look out into the world and see things that we can't change, and to fill ourselves up with rage and despair about them, but in doing so fail to attend to this something that's in us that is required right in our ordinary everyday with the people we're around and the communities we're in, and it's such a trap. Once we start to externalize all of this, it's such a trap if we forget our own complexity and the complexity of the people that we're with. And so when I sit here looking at you, looking across space to you, it seems to me that one of the things that's called for is to really deeply see you as a fractal expression of what Nick calls God. And I think we could also call life. We could have lots of words for this something, but to see the word that I have come to love is holiness, actually, like the ineffable, sacred something that you are, to find that in you, which is just a marvel. I mean, if we'll just slow down enough to feel that from all the people around, everyone we're with, they're right in the center of us, of this vastness, there is this. And then also to find it in ourselves. And that then helps us with this kind of discernment, which is, again, if we externalize all of this, if we get into binaries of good and evil, and then we split things off and externalize it and go, well, the sort of the okayness is here and all the badness is all those people out there. Not only are we in trouble in lots of ways, but it also robs us of our capacity to go, okay, so there's holiness here, there's life here. And then I'm called, there's a responsibility that's called on here to sift through what's arising in me, to honor it and to respect it, but then also to be choiceful about what I bring. I have power to cultivate my courage, my integrity, my nuance, my responsiveness, to keep on turning towards that which is life. And that I think a few weeks ago, Lizzie, you and I were talking about coaching, and we've been in conversations about development as well, about the adult development over time. And I think this is a phrase that I've brought many times into this conversation that comes from the ancient rabbinic part of the Jewish tradition, which is this call to cultivate a many-chambered heart, a heart of many rooms, they say, which I think is such a lovely phrase. We have to be able to hold all of this in us in order to be grown up in the world, in order to take care of the world, take care of ourselves and one another. And then we have to be able to choose from the many rooms in us to go, I really am one of many rooms. What of these many rooms is the thing to bring here? And what is the thing to hold in a different way? And how do I, when I'm with you, how do I not get caught up in the reactive something in me and hold your complexity and know that in amidst you and I may be in a very destructive mutual situation in which the nullifying destructive potency is playing out between us. How do we find our way to hold the inherent empathetic understanding, growthful disposition towards ourselves and one another that we have a chance of resolving or improving our situation, and how do we not get into binaries of labeling one another? And I think it's just to talk about the world situation at the moment, as much as it's relevant to say, this splitting of us, this giant splitting into good and evil, like the right ones and the wrong ones, that is permeating our public discourse, I think fails to do that. I think it fails to see that in every one of these, there are these complex humans like you and like really not so different from mm-hmm. you and me.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to do all of this well, it really helps to have a kind of faithfulness in the inherent capacity that is like the real heart of us, to bring ourselves and to invite in others that which is life-giving and sacred in one another. Because if we don't attend there, if our worldview is just that it's all just roiling chaos and we're just accidental machine-like somethings, we'll not cultivate the kind of seeing that means I can sit in front of you and look at your luminous face and know that behind that face are worlds upon worlds upon worlds upon worlds upon worlds, and that I need to take care of both of us mm-hmm. and that I can, because that's what we do, because that's what existence is, which is what Nick is inviting us into.
You're making me think so strongly, Justin, of like the pace of life, outer and inner, and what it actually means to slow down and to live intentionally. So if we all had a chance to say, well, for the sake of what am I here, or what are my gifts, what are my qualities, what am I going to bring, and how am I going to bring that? I'm thinking about, you know, extending this out from the kind of individual nature of this to the family or to community or some kind of social change, some kind of offering into the world that is an offering in service of goodness and life and benevolence and generosity versus an offering of nullifying destructive potency, and knowing really what it is that we are doing things for. And that starts with, like you're saying, when I look at you or I come to your house and we go for a walk, like what's it for? Like what's happening here? And then seeing what I need to be like to serve what it's for. I think it's so easy to be asleep to why we're all doing things together or being anywhere near one another in the first place, and just be habitual and sleepy and kind of taking each other for granted and having everything just be a given, like a blind given or something. And so I'm feeling really moved by this power that we all have to slow down and be intentional and be honest about stuff, which is sometimes really hard. You know, earlier you said, you know, we do know what the virtues are that we have. We know when something is kind and the right thing to do or something like that. But honestly, over recent years, even that has felt called into question for me. Like it feels like everything has been sliced up. So there's been kind of so many discombobulating situations where I'm not sure I know the answer to that anymore. Like what's kind? Is it kind to not do that or to do that? You know, I that's what I mean about this kind of the grayness of everything. There are so many situations because of the way the world is becoming where I don't know. So I have to be really reflective. I really have to be reflective to say, why do I want to say anything at all? Why would I not want to say anything at all? And it's like a kind of a heart excavation operation that has to happen in me to really know what goodness looks and feels like here. What does it look like and feel like? And I think that's part of the discombobulation I feel about being a person at the moment, is that there's so many things where I'm like, well, I can't come down hard anywhere on what goodness looks like or even what the nullifyingness is. Sometimes it all feels called into question. So I'm really appreciating this call to just slow down, steady ourselves and think, well, what is this for anyway? Like, What is my intention? What feels like an intention that's filled with this fundamental cosmic disposition of goodness that Nick's inviting us into? And that then makes me feel quite hopeful, because I know I can do that. I know it's not what I'm doing all the time, but I know I can do it. And so I know I can make this choice. And I think that's why this source is so like potent for me, is that regardless of all of the definitions, regardless of what everyone thinks about everything or whatever, I think you're right, Justin. We do know what feels like we're aligned with this cosmic disposition of goodness when we act. And we know when we're not. And we might have to learn a million times about when it feels like we're not doing that. And we keep doing it, and we keep doing it, and we keep doing it. And then one day we say, I'm just not going to do that anymore. And so I just have a kind of compassion for all of us in the choices that we really do need to make. You know, we do need to know whether we're acting in the forces of benevolence or whether we're acting in the forces of nullifying and kind of deadening, I guess, and sometimes destroying. And it really matters to be in that wondering, in that inquiry these days and every days.
Just add one brief thing, Lizzie. I really appreciate what you said about both not knowing and not knowing and knowing, that we've been in this, in a way, this conversation about how do we know anything about anything. And I more and more feel like, with all of the complexity, we have to hold both, that it can be true at once that I cannot know absolutely whether an action I take is kind or benevolent in the way it unfolds in the world. I can't know that until I see the result of what I do. And so that kind of humility in the face of not knowing is really important. And very often there are certain kinds of things where our certainty really causes trouble. And then there are places that certainty really helps. Like if you can't breathe, I should help you breathe. You know, like there are certain places we go, okay, I know. But I think what I'm taking from what you're saying that helps clarify what I want to say here is that we often may not know, and so it takes that slowing down, paying attention and discernment. And sometimes I can feel very sure that I'm acting, that what's arising in me is kindness, and later on I look back and I go, oh, that was self-protection, not kindness. Like, I don't always know in the moment. Mm-hmm. But trusting that we humans can know enough, we can tune in enough if we pay enough attention to find out what is in tune with this cosmic disposition that Nick says. In other words, we're not completely clueless here.
Mm.
We do have the capacity to discern, and our discernment may often be very partial compared to what we really need to work out in ourselves. But I think that's what I meant before when I said we know, is we can trust that with continually living and paying attention and living and paying attention and acting and then reflecting and then returning to our own capacities, that we deepen our capacity to be more accurate about how we're bringing ourselves over time. And we'll never be done. We'll never know absolutely. And that's what learning is for. Thank goodness we humans can do it.
Well, I feel very supported, Justin, in just stepping into the day with some deeper intentionality and some spaciousness. And I feel like we're kind of pulling something apart so that we can kind of see it in this conversation. I'm really grateful for that. And I'm grateful for everybody being here with us. Grateful for Nick for being a person who just says things and sticks it on the page and gives us hope, really. And Justin, thank you for being here with me and with everyone. And we will see you all next week.
Yes. Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.